recorded, so let's get started. My apologies. Okay, so we have much to do today. We're going to go over two more techniques that will teach you how to make tremendous sums of money, magnify our gains, magnify our losses, and when we discuss how to buy on margin and sell short. Two more techniques along with futures and options that I hope you will never do, but we need to understand them because this is an introduction to investments class. So we're good started on that. But first, look at that. We were down over 20-some percent, 25 or so percent, but here we're now back up to only minus 7.5%, which is pretty darn good, dear students. Pretty amazing considering the turmoil and what's going on with over 70,000 people who are dead now. It's a nightmare. It's a horror film come to life, horror picture or book come to life. And I think a lot of people are just whistling in the dark now. But by the end of this year, I have a bad feeling that we're going to be down a whole lot more. But we'll see. You know, you never know. You never know. I'm not selling. And as I said about a month or so ago, when the market falls 5, 10% in one day, I just put our my wife and my Roth IRA contributions ahead of time because we just make one contribution once a month to our Roth IRA. So I'm just doing that. That's it. That's all I'm doing. Not moot trading or buying, selling or anything. I'm just accelerating contributions I was going to do. Okay. So that's what's going on with our portfolio. Look who's the Beyond Meat, the one thing that I was short at the beginning of the semester. I don't know, IPOs are scary, but now with the with all the meat disappearing from the shelves, people are going, well, maybe plant-based meat's not, you know, plant-based fake meat is not so bad. Can you repeat yourself? I'm sorry, Andres, what do you need me to repeat?
What you just said, like, about the portfolio I disjoint.
I'm sorry?
I disjoint, so I dismiss.
Okay. Okay, well, I will. It's all being recorded, Andres, so just go back and listen to it, okay?
Okay.
Okay, now. All right, so that's that. Now we need a joke. Joke. Did you hear about the... how many Microsoft engineers it takes to screw in a light bulb? None. That's hardware. They don't do hardware. They just do software. They're software engineers. So they no Microsoft engineers work on light bulbs. I know their jokes are bad. Okay, I apologize. Okay, so as I said before, those of you who were here before, I just got a plug. Yay, we just got a plug from NBC, of all places. Business 123, plugged by NBC. So thank you very much, NBC. As one of the... there's five of us. Five free Introduction to Investment classes. So check it out. Very cool. All right, so now we're going to take a quick look at the... we'll discuss the final exam in detail next week. But notice that on Tuesday we did options and futures. Today we're going to do buying and selling securities. Next week, or maybe today, we'll get into maybe one of them, if it depends on time. But we're going to do miscellaneous topics in investing. And all of the questions on the final exam from these chapters are going to be available to you. So there they are, all the questions on the final exam. Next week we'll go over the free pre-final worksheet, which hint will be very much like the calculations on the final. So there's the answer key. So we'll discuss that in detail later on. So now I'm going to stop the share and see who's here. My apologies, just real quick. We've got Carla. Good morning, Carla, and Luis Marquez. Andres is here, Luis Marchand, Islas, very mucho gusto, Justice Brown, thank you, and I think I got everybody, Sam Alcala, okay, cool, okay, so let's keep going. All right, so now we're going to go to the presentation, okay, and let's see how that shows up on your screen. So you should be seeing Chapter 2, Buying and Selling Securities. Okay. Chapter 2? Wait a minute. We're at the end of the semester. Why? Well, I vehemently disagree with the author's placement of this chapter. They want you to understand how to buy and sell securities, including shorting, selling, buying on margin and short sales, before we even know what a stock is. I mean, I think it's just ridiculous, which is why we put it at the end of the semester. So we're going to discuss brokerage accounts very quickly, and then we're going to get into the meat. Buying on margin and selling short. Both techniques are designed to magnify your gains, but they can also magnify your losses. Nothing's free, dear students. There's advantages and disadvantages, as I hope we have impressed upon you all semester long. So there are three basic types of brokerage firms. You know, the differences between them are fading away as the internet and other technologies take hold. But still, you go to a full-service broker, here's your full-service broker, and you're going to pay a whole lot more, right? Merrill, Stench, and Morgan Stupid. I'm sorry, Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley. And they normally don't want to talk to you unless you, it used to be $50,000. Now they want you to have at least $500,000. I don't even want to talk to you unless you have $500,000. The discount brokerages have basically morphed into just two different types. There's Schwab, which is a very good company, by the way. I'm not trying to badmouth them, whereas I like to badmouth the full-service brokers. And then the mom-and-pop shops, as they're often called, A.G. Edwards, E. Edward Jones. They're small, usually independently run brokerage firms that are backed by a much larger, what's called clearinghouse. Who they have the processing power. They've got the offices on Wall Street. Actually, all the offices now are in New Jersey across the river from Manhattan, because Manhattan's just so damn expensive. And then the deep discount brokers, the Scott Trades, which are now TD Water, TD Ameritrade, and E-Trade, and Robinhood. What can we expect to pay for each? What kind of service can we expect from each? Well, commissions are basically going away. The full-service brokerage firms now charge you a wealth management fee, as we discussed, although I'm pretty sure some people are still paying $70, $100 or more a trade, whereas the discount brokers are down to about $8 or $9 a trade, and the deep discount brokers $4 or $5. But now we have Robinhood, which has become very popular with young adults, who don't charge any commission. And other brokerage firms are following their lead. Wait a minute. How can a brokerage firm make any money with a $0 commission? Right? In fact, how do they make money with a $5 commission? You remember from Chapter 5, Scott Trade Incorporated receives remuneration for directing orders to particular broker-dealers or market centers for execution. Such remuneration is considered compensation to the firm, and the source and amount of any compensation received by the firm in connection with your transaction will be disclosed upon request. What? Remember this? They are making money on what's called order flow, which is sort of a silly name, but they're directing your transactions to particular broker-dealers, market makers, market centers. And those people don't necessarily have the best price. As we saw, there are dozens of prices at any one time. So these market makers, these dealers, then give a kickback. That's the real world word for remuneration. They're giving money back to the brokerage firm. And, you know, it's tiny. It's, you know, it's a very small amount of money. I mean, but they're doing millions of transactions every day. So that's how they make their money. So you're still paying for it. Realize you're still paying for it. Okay, now, slide number 5. As the competition for your business has gotten fiercer, the methods of charging investors for investment services have gotten more creative. And Merrill Lynch experimented with charging $3,000 per year for unlimited trades, but they don't do that anymore. What they do now is the modern day agogo way to soak clients. Oh, I mean, I'm sorry. Charge for brokerage services is called wealth management. And remember, way back in chapter 4, when we talked about mutual funds and the F shares, the FI shares, the I shares, the brokerage firms are tacking on one upwards of 2%. 1% is very typical, although I've seen a little bit less than that, but now you're seeing more 1.25, 1.5. These types of programs are now being pushed by all the major full-service brokerage firms, and I get in a lot of hot water because I don't like these things. You wind up spending a whole lot more, and we showed you in Chapter 4 how much more you can spend over a significant period of time. You can wind up spending, you know, a hell of a lot more, hundreds of thousands of dollars more for somebody with a $500,000 account, and that's the people they really want. You know, if you're going to put $50 a month away, they're going to go away. We don't want you. I want you. I'm very happy because these are the people who need help. If you have $5 million, you don't really need the help of a broker. I mean, obviously, you can afford it, but you're doing okay. It's the people who are putting $50, $100 a month away. They're the people that I'm interested in because they're the ones that need help. There's all flavors of this kind, and the latest wrinkle, which is actually, it started in the mid-2000s, is performance-based wealth management. What's going on here? You only pay your advisor when you make money. The advisor receives 10 to 20% of your earnings when you make money. What? Say you make 10%. They take 1 of that percent or 2 of the percent. But if you lose money, the advisor does not make any money. Do you see what happens? Or if you don't make any money, they don't take any earnings. It's a variation of the way hedge funds charge their shareholders. And I remember going to a seminar back in 2006 where it was this company, which Dunham & Associates are based up in Del Mar. And they were saying, they were talking, they were making their pitch about this. And of course, the market had gone in two directions, up and way up for a while. And I'm waiting, I'm thinking, well, what's going to happen when they hit a bear market? And of course, once they hit the bear market, they didn't make money for three years or so, because it took them 3 or 4 or 5 years for them to come back till they were starting to make money. And so now if you go to their website, it says they charge you a tiny little bit if you don't make money. They still charge something. Although it does sound tempting, only pay your wealth advisor, your financial advisor, when you make money. The reality is that you have the potential to pay far, far more than your investment services using this method. As I said, Dunham has altered their fee structure, so they now charge much less. They still charge something, though, when your account does not gain, instead of charging nothing. And it's happened a few times, seminars where I stick up for the old way of just charging people the A shares, charging people a brokerage fee, and being done with it. And oh boy, do people get hot under the collar at me. They don't like that. And so I have learned to keep my mouth shut and just be an old-fashioned fuddy-dud. Okay, so that's the new modern-day agogo way to be soaked. I'm sorry, to be charged by your financial advisor. Now, what about anti-brokerage? Remember the dividend reinvestment plans we discussed back in Chapter 5? You bypass a brokerage firm. You go right to the well-established companies like Coca-Cola and Home Depot and IBM and all these other companies that have been around for decades. And now more and more the newer companies are doing it. You go to their website. You look for investor relations or investor whatever. And they don't do it themselves, but they have some company sell you directly their shares and then reinvest those dividends automatically back in more shares. They are low cost, but you know, nothing's perfect. If you have 18 different companies, you're going to have 18 different statements. Now there's some companies like betterinvesting.org, which uses a company actually, foliofn.com. Betterinvesting.org is the National Association of Investors Corporation, the folks who have the investment clubs. They charge, I think, $10 a month to keep all your dividend reinvestment plans in one place. And now, obviously, many of the brokerage firms are going to do the same thing. They're going to say, oh, we'll do it too. So you don't have to go away from a brokerage firm. They will allow you to set up a dividend reinvestment plan. And we talked about them. They are very, very cool. Because you don't need your dividends in the form of cash. If you do need your dividends in the form of cash to live off of, that's different. That's usually when you're in retirement. But when you're building your nest egg, you want to reinvest those dividends. As a mutual fund does for you automatically, you can do it through a dividend reinvestment plan. So cool. So that was our quick discussion how are we doing for time? Not bad. Quick discussion of different brokerage firms. On the assignment, there's no assignment for this chapter, but there is a suggested exercise for you to do where you go in and do some research. Look at what the various brokerage firms have to offer and see which ones interest you. Because you got to put your money somewhere, right? Okay. Now, dear students, get your thinking cap on because we're going to turn your little heads around. When you open up an account, the most common account at a brokerage firm is called a cash account. This is a brokerage account in which all transactions are made on a strictly cash basis. Cash accounts are the simplest arrangements requiring no credit check of the customer by the brokerage firm. Okay, why? Because you're not going to borrow anything from them. When you open up a brokerage account, there's often a provision that says we may do a credit check. Well, if you open up a cash account, they're not going to do a credit check because they don't care. You're always going to pay money. Once, though, you've established a good relationship, most brokerage firms will allow you to purchase shares of stock even if you don't have enough cash in the account. Wait a minute. Why do they do that? Well, because remember from Chapter 5, it takes 3 days for stock transactions to settle. So you have 3 business days to get the money in your account. Now, the deep discount brokers won't let you do this. If the money is not in your account the day you purchase it, even though you won't actually get the shares for 3 days, they won't let you do it. And conversely, when you sell a stock, it takes 3 business days to receive the money. Again, once you've established a good relationship with your brokerage firm, if you sell a stock one day, say it's Tuesday, you don't have to wait until Friday. They'll give you the money because they know they trust you and they'll just know that you're a good client. Okay? So that's what people are normally used to doing, cash accounts, even though there's that 3-day window where you can get the money in and get the money out before you actually make the transaction finalized. What's a margin account? And I really don't like this name, but it's called buying on margin, a margin account. It's a brokerage account in which, subject to limits, securities can be bought and sold on credit. If you open up a margin account, the brokerage firm is going to do a credit check to determine your credit worthiness, since you're going to be borrowing money from them. In other words, they're going to look at you like a bank looks at you when you apply for an auto loan or a credit card or mortgage, because you have the ability to borrow money from your brokerage firm to actually buy shares. The interest rate you pay on money borrowed from your broker is called the margin rate. And it's actually a very good interest rate. It's way better than credit card interest rates. Credit card interest rates, 20%, 15%. This is usually about 2 or 3 points above a money market's rates. So right now, it's maybe 4 or 5% at the most, which is, not bad. It's not as good as a mortgage, but then, that's a house. That's tied to your house. Mortgages are now 3%, 3.25. But that's still a very good rate. So you get to borrow money from your brokerage account. But why would you want to do that? Well, slide number 11. A margin account allows you to perform margin trading, buying on margin, leveraged account. There's that word again, leverage. Remember, leverage is the use of borrowed funds to purchase, in this case, securities, stocks, bonds. It magnifies your returns by reducing the amount of equity, fancy word for money, that the investment must put up. And the margin is the portion of the value of an investment that is not borrowed. See, this is why I don't like that. I think it should be the other way around. The margin is the part that you did borrow. No, no, no. And again, the questions on the exam are going to be, they're already on the website. So check them out. Make sure you've done your research to get them right on the final exam, please. Don't get them wrong. So for example, say you had $100 in your, or you came up with $75 in your account and borrowed $25. You would be 75% margin, 75% of it is yours, and 25% is borrowed from the brokerage firm. So why would you buy on margin? Buying on margin allows the investor to use financial leverage. This is called, this is the use of debt financing to magnify your investment returns. Right, yeah, or magnify your losses too. Buying on margin allows an investor to tap into the equity in their account without actually selling their investments and generating commissions and taxable transactions. So this second use of buying on margin is actually something that makes sense later on. You know, some of you have a home and you've been, you know, paying down the mortgage and your house has gone up in value. You can then use the equity in your home to get a loan. It's called a home equity line of credit, right? And say you need to, you know, replace the furnace or get the new roof or whatever. You can borrow from the equity in your home. Well, the same thing is true for your stocks. Later on in life, dears, don't do it now, dear students, but later on, when you have built up a substantial amount of equity in your portfolio of stocks, you can borrow from that. Now, you got to pay it back or else sell the shares, but it's a lot better than having to go to a credit card, right? Buying on margin is much like buying a house. When you purchase a house, you don't come up with the total amount. You put up 10 or 20%, finance the rest. Stocks require at least 50% down because stocks are far more volatile than real estate. So here are some terms that, again, you're going to be on the exam, but you're going to have the questions beforehand. What's the margin requirement, the initial margin? Well, that's set by the Federal Reserve Bank. Why? Because the brokerage firm is actually kind of acting like a bank here where they're lending you money. So the Federal Reserve Board, the Bankers Bank, so the Fed, says no, you have to have them put up at least 50%. Now, they can change that. They can change it at any time, but it's been 50% for decades. This allows you to purchase the same amount of stock with less money. And so the part that you borrow is the margin loan. So the part that you've come up with is the margin. The part that you've borrowed is the margin loan, the amount of your account that's been borrowed. So here's an example, slide 14. You are looking at a stock that costs $20, but you don't have the whole $20. So you come up with $10 and you borrow $10 from your broker. So initial margin is 50%. The margin loan is $10. 50% of 20 is $10. So now, the market rises to $30. Congratulations. I'm sorry, the market price of the stock rises to $30. Congratulations. You made $10 on a $10 investment. Instead of having to come up with $20 to make a $10 gain, you only had to come up with half of that, $10. So instead of a 50% return on your investment, you received 100% return on your investment. You see where the temptation occurs? We're able to magnify our gain. Before, we had to come up with $20 to make $10. Now we only have to come up with $10 to make $10. Yippee! What happens? Slide 15. You put up the $10, you borrow $10, you purchase one share of stock for $20, but this time the market price drops to $10. Oops! Only half of the money was yours. You borrowed the rest. Your entire $10 investment is wiped out. Buying on margin magnifies your gain and magnifies your loss. Margin buying was one of the major contributing factors to the crash of 1929, which set up the Depression, the Great Depression. At that time, the margin requirement was only 10%, instead of it is as it is 50%. Why? Because people were getting very giddy. The market, the stock market, had exploded on the upside. Well, the economy was exploding on the upside. And people thought, well, stocks are kind of like real estate, right? We only need 10, 20% down for a home. Why should we only have to put 10% down on a stock? Why? Because stocks are far more volatile. Stocks can drop 10% in a matter of day. It's happened a few times already this year. They can drop 20, 30% in a matter of weeks. And we saw in 1987, October 19th, it dropped 23% in one day. So that was a very bad idea. For this reason, for the fact that stocks are so volatile and you can lose a lot of money quickly, the above scenario that we see is not going to be allowed. It's prohibited. Our intrepid investor would have had a margin call. What's that? Hang on to your hat. We'll see that in a bit. The brokerage firm wouldn't allow this to happen. As you started losing more and more money, eventually they're going to say, uh-oh, you're in trouble. We got two options. You come up with more money, or we got to sell this share right now. And when you filled out the broker agreement, you agreed to that, to let them go ahead and get you out of the position without your acknowledgement. Now, they're going to try to acknowledge, they're going to try to contact you, but sometimes they don't have time, as we'll see. Okay, so slide number 16. Because margin trading is inherently more risky, margin accounts are more highly scrutinized by brokerage firms. The restricted account is a margin account whose equity is less than that initial 50%. If your equity goes below 50%, no more margin purchases, okay? You can leave it there for some time until things get really bad. But if you want to make any more purchases, you've got to bring in more money or sell some of your stocks or securities. Information as technology has made the brokerage firm's job of scrutinizing margin clients much easier. Now, every day, the computer spits out a list of customers that are in trouble or restricted. So you see, and it's not even on the paper anymore, so it's on a screen. But you see, if you're a broker and you have clients who are doing this, it's going to come up in red. It's going to say, be careful. These people are no longer able to make any trades until they have brought us more money or sold some of their shares. The maintenance margin is the absolute minimum, typically anywhere between 25 to 35% or more. The Federal Reserve Bank sets it, and right now it's 25%. If your stock starts going down, your margin, your part of what you owe, is going to go down. I'm sorry, the part of what you own is going to go down. The part of what you owe is going to go up. So you started off at 50%, now you're at 40, 30. As soon as you hit 25 or higher, your brokerage firm can make it higher, but it's got to be at least 25%. That's what the Federal Reserve Bank says. You're going to get the dreaded margin call. And some of you might remember the video we saw where the guy said margin calls were being flooded all throughout the Wall Street on October 19th, 1987. If you remember that video, I didn't make any mention of it because I thought you are confused enough, but this guy was talking, he was using all the jargon and say there were margin calls all throughout the street. This is a notification that you're in trouble. You've lost a lot of money, and you have two options. You can bring in more money, or you can sell the shares right now and take your loss. So if the investor, as I said, does not meet the margin call in sufficient time, now this is typically 3 days, 72 hours, but they don't have to wait. They are authorized to sell the stocks to keep you from losing even more. You've already lost. They're just worried about you losing even more. And there's a saying on Wall Street called never meet a margin call. In other words, you've lost. It's time to sell the securities. Don't be throwing more money into this. because you're gonna, you might even lose more. Now, who knows? It could turn around. You don't know that, but that's the saying. Never meet a margin call. You've lost. Take your lumps and go away. All right? Of course, if your investments do very well, then you can use the excess margin you create in your margin account to purchase additional stock without having to come up with more cash. It's called excess margin. And the technique is called pyramiding. You use the excess margin from your paper profits in your margin account to partly or fully finance the acquisition of additional securities, buying of more shares. What do you think of this strategy? Yeah, in other words, you're building your empire based on debt. And it's very scary. I mean, I've never done it, and I don't think I ever will, but other people do, and you know, that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. But yes, it can definitely magnify your gains and magnify your losses. Paying interest, slide 19, on the margin loan also adds yet another drag on your investment returns. Your margined investments must meet or exceed the interest rate in order for you just to break even. So remember, you borrowed this money. So not only is your broker charging you a commission or maybe that wealth management fee, they're also charging you interest. See, the brokerage firms, they want to be banks too. Everybody wants to be a bank. Everybody wants to be able to charge you interest. So now you know why your broker is always so happy to take your calls, right? Because not only are they charging you for commissions or maybe that wealth management fee, they're also charging you for interest. So how do we, okay, so slide 20. I'm sorry if I'm going through this too quickly. Just raise your hand or put your microphone on and scream at me because I don't see the chat. I don't know why I can't see the chat, but margin trading. So slide number 20. Why would I buy on margin? And the easy answer is, from my perspective, remember, everyone's different, you shouldn't. The risks are not worth the potential reward, in my humble opinion. However, dear students, there is a valid, logical reason for having a margin account, which we've already discussed. The margin account, once you've built up a substantial portfolio of high quality, long-term oriented, prudent stocks, allows you to temporarily borrow against your investments without having to sell the investments, which you might not want to do. You know, I'm really happy. I got Visa. I bought it, you know, it was 10 years ago, and it's really done really well. You do not incur the commission costs, and you don't trigger the capital gains taxes, but you do pay interest. So this is, there's the exception, because I screamed and hollered and yelled at you on Tuesday, stay away from options, stay away from futures, and I'm trying to keep you away from margin trading, but after your nest egg is substantial, your portfolio is substantial, maybe you're really happy with Nike and you don't want to sell it. You can borrow from it if you need some short-term cash. You know, you need to fix the furnace or have the roof repaired or whatever. So, discussion. What do you think of margin securities, huh? Let's stop the share for a second. Go back to everybody here. Who do we got? Isaac is here. Welcome, Isaac. Anybody else? That's the only one new. Anybody? How do you manage? $20,000 if you want them to manage your money, Merrill Edge. Oh, Andre says that you got to have at least $20,000 to go into Merrill Stench. I'm sorry, Merrill Edge. Oh, there's Imani. I'm sorry, Imani.
No, for them to manage your money.
For them to manage your money?
I believe like a mutual fund. I don't know, like a financial advisor, like, manage your money.
With only 20,000?
Yeah, what this guy was, this was the amount this guy was telling me for him to like manage my money.
And what was he going to charge you, 1% or 1.5%?
Tell the truth, I didn't like it because at the time I had $8,000 and yeah, so I say no, I just...
But you don't remember what he quoted you for a fee.
We didn't talk about it.
Okay. Well, that's a very small amount of money. For Meryl, for Morgan Stanley, for these very, you know, for the full service brokerage firms. You know, 30 years ago, they wanted you to have $50,000. You know, this was in the 1990s when I got started. But I guess, you know, 20 grand is still something to not to sneeze at. Certainly, you know, that's a lot of money in my humble opinion. But now I had one client who said, this one guy told her that he never took a client for less than 500,000. And he was just, and this was a few years back, he was about ready to up that minimum to 750,000. And I thought, man, great. You know, these are the people, they're doing okay, right? You know, they don't need, I mean, certainly if you need a plumber, you need a plumber. If you need a doctor, you go to a doctor, right? But in this case, you know, they're doing okay. I'm more interested in people who are just starting out, which is why, of course, I'm here at Southwestern Community College, and I'm not, you know, not with my three-piece suit helping million-dollar clients. Okay, any other questions, any other thoughts? What do you think of margining? Anyone, anybody ready to do it? It's not as dangerous as options, but still, it can get you in a lot of trouble. But wait, there's more. There's more. So let's go back and go back to the presentation. Because when you take the Series 7, oh, where are we? Come on, go to the next slide. Here's some examples. When you take the Series 7 to become a stockbroker or registered representative or whatever, registered investment advisor, you're going to have questions about margin trading, just as we talked about on Tuesday. You're going to have questions about options, and these are some of the trickiest questions on the exam. Don't worry, it's just a lot of arithmetic, but you just have to zig when you're supposed to zig and zag when you're supposed to zag. So here's an example where the stock was selling for $50, the person put up $30, borrowed $20, there was 60% margin. If the stock price went to $80, oh boy, now there's 75% margin, so they have excess margin. But if the stock price falls to $25, which is a 50% drop, which happens, right? Now they have a margin call. And so these are the formulas, and we're not going to do them. There's no calculations. But on the website, I'll show it to you after we're done the next section, there's a worksheet with problems that are very similar to the Series 7. Very similar to the problems you'll see on the Series 7 that you have to learn how to do. And again, you slog through them enough times, you do them enough times, you'll do it okay. If you don't, if you sort of just blow it off, you won't pass the exam. As we'll talk about the Series 7 exam once again by the end of today. My last attempt to get you into the industry. Okay, so we're not going to look at the account balance sheet, but this is how we do the problems that are on the worksheet that we'll take a look at later on. Okay, so let's go through that. Now, slide 25. Long stock purchases, buying long, going long. Well, this is the transaction that you think about when you think about buying a stock. When you purchase a stock long, you're in it for the long term. A transaction in which investors buy securities, and we're talking mostly about stocks, in the hope that they will increase in value and be sold at a later date for profit. This is the type of transaction that people commonly think of when they hear that someone bought stock. Buying long is certainly the most common form of transaction. And why are you buying the stock? In the expectation of dividends or capital appreciation, capital gains, or both. So you've heard the saying, buy low, sell high, right? Makes sense. This is what we've been talking about all semester long. Well, guess what, dear students? Oh, I'm sorry. Slide 26. Let's look at the purchase. You purchase one share of common stock for $20, and the price rises to $30. You've made $10 on a $20 investment. That's a 50% increase, right? You're familiar with this. If the price dropped to $10, you lost $10 or half of your investment. That's a 50% decrease. So think about it. You buy a stock for 20 bucks, it goes up to 30, you sell it, okay, I made 10 bucks on a $20 investment. But there's another way to make money, and that's by selling short sale, a short transaction. You're in it for the short term. It's called shorting the stock, going short, selling short. It's the opposite of buying long. You sell a security, and again, mostly stocks. We'll talk about stocks, but it could be any security, but it's mostly stocks. You sell a security that you don't own. You borrowed it from somebody else. And you eventually have to purchase it back. You can't do it forever, like you, as you can with a stock. When you go long, you can buy one share of Netflix and hold it forever. And then you have to buy this back and return it to the lender. You're hoping that the price goes down. You see, you're trying to sell high, buy low. Whereas we're used to buy low, sell high, you can make money by selling high and then turning around and buying low. Doesn't matter which order you do it in, right? Selling short must take place in a margin account. That's why we did buying on margin first. Since you are borrowing the stock you sell from the brokerage firm. So in the margin account, we borrowed money. We borrowed cash to buy a stock. In the selling short transaction, we're borrowing a share of stock. Usually, they want you to do at least 100 shares, but you don't have to with technology now. They don't care. You want to borrow 17 shares, borrow 17 shares. So you see what's going on here? It doesn't sound legal. You're borrowing something that you don't own and you're selling it? It happens all the time. Here's how it works. Slide 28. You borrow the stock from another shareholder without their knowledge, and then you sell it on the open market. You receive money for selling the stock and that you do not own. Did I record this? I'm still recording. I also had this thought. I just had this pang of anxiety because I'm recording it on my voice recorder, but I thought, okay, I am. You borrow the stock from another shareholder without their knowledge and sell it on the open market. You receive money for selling stock that you do not own. Wouldn't you love to be able to sell somebody else's car and make the money? Well, you know, you're regulated, folks. They're watching you like a hawk. You wait for the stock price to go down. You then buy back the shares at a lower price, pocketing the difference. Now, the shareholder you borrowed the shares from never knows that the shares were borrowed. You know, the brokerage firm does all the financial sleight of hand. It's called the back office. The folks in the back office are taking care of this. Oh, by the way, you must pay any dividends the company declares to the investor who's bought the shares that you sold short, because that investor, even though they don't know it, no longer owns the shares. They're borrowed. He still owns them, right? He or she still owns them, but they've been borrowed, so they're not in his account anymore. They're out there in the world, and so you have to pay the dividends. Now, doesn't this sound as if it were illegal? I mean, you're borrowing something you don't own and selling it. It happens all the time, and that's why they're going to watch you like a hawk. That's why they did a credit check on you to make sure that you're reliable. So think about it. Let's look at it from a standpoint. Forget the stocks, and let's think of riding lawnmowers or something like this. You go down to Walmart or Sears or Home Depot, and you see this riding lawnmower for $500. Now, you know that it's going to go on sale or you believe it's going to go on sale tomorrow for $250. And you know that your neighbor, Fred, just bought one. So you go to Fred, and you're on good terms with Fred, and you say, "Hey, Fred, what a great lawnmower. Can I borrow that for a couple days?" And Fred goes, "Okay." So you take that lawnmower, and you go next door to Charlie, and you say, "Hey, Charlie, I know you want to buy one of these lawnmowers. I got one for $500. You want to buy it?" And Charlie goes, "Yeah." So you sell it to him for $500. Now, the next day, it goes on sale for $250 down at the Home Depot or whatever. You run down there, and you buy it for $250 and give it back to Fred. You see? That's how you're making money. It sounds like it's a scheme. It's illegal. No, it's well regulated. Don't worry, you're not. But it's certainly allowed. And you hear people scream and holler that short selling should not be allowed. And yet, it's been going on since the beginning. There's a video that we might not have time to see, but I'll point you to it, that talks about the very first stock and the very first selling short of that stock. So, here's how it works. As we just went through the riding lawnmower description, you borrow the shares from somebody today, and then you sell those shares in the market. And then sometime in the future, you buy the shares back from the market and return the shares. If the price goes down, you have made money. So you're hoping the price goes down. If the price goes up, you have lost money. It's the opposite of buying long. And some of you might remember our discussion of Google versus GM when, you know, the PE of Google was really high and the PE of Google was really low. And Google was paying an outrageous amount of money in dividends. And I was looking at that company thinking, this company's going to go bankrupt. I mean, the next recession, they're toast. Because they were losing money on all the small cars they were making. The only car, this is back in 2006, the only money they were making was on the SUVs and the sport utility vehicles and those Hummers. And so I kept saying, short it. And I remember, never short a stock. Peter Lynch says never short a stock. I don't want GM to go bankrupt, and I would have done very, very well. But what you're doing when you short a stock, you're essentially saying, I want that company to do badly. I want that company to suffer. And I don't like that at all. I want all companies, even though all companies can't, I want all companies to be, you know, successful and everybody to be profitable and everybody have good food and clothing and shelter. But that's not going to happen, right? There's going to be some winners and some losers. But this is how shorting works. And I hope you never do it because it's very dangerous. Slide number 30, as we'll see. I'm getting ahead of myself. My apologies. You sell a stock short for $20. Here's just how it works. We're on slide 30. You receive $20 from the sale of the stock, even though the stock was not yours. You borrowed it from somebody else. Now the stock price goes down to $10. You buy it back at $10, closing out the transaction. That's what they say. They say you want to close out the transaction, yes. You give the stock back to the person you borrowed it from, and you get to keep the $10 difference. Congratulations. You made $10 on a $0 investment? Wait a minute. No. Not quite, dear students. You can't make $10 on a $0 investment. It's a margin account, remember? You borrowed the stock that you sold. The rules for a margin account still apply. You must put up at least 50%. And most people's response is 50% of what? 50% of what you borrowed. 50% of the proceeds from the sale of the borrowed stock. You borrowed the stock, remember? So again, the brokerage firms use the account balance sheet to keep track of the investor's margin. So you can't just say, I want to borrow this stock without coming up with some cash, all right? They're going to want you to put up 50% of what you're going to receive. So we'll look at some examples. And again, this is, as I said, one of the trickier parts of the Series 7 exam. Okay, here's the same example. But this time, instead of the stock going down, it goes up. You lose money. People who own the stock make money, but the short sellers go down. You sell a short stock for $20. You receive $20 from the sale of your stock, even though the stock was not yours. Remember, you borrowed it from somebody else. But now the price goes to $40. Oops. You must buy the stock now at $40. Remember, you borrowed it. You must replace it at some future date. You must buy it back. You just lost $20 on your short transaction. Very dangerous, dear students. When you buy long, you can only lose the purchase price of the stock. You buy a stock for $20 long, it goes to zero, you lost $20. Once the stock reaches zero, it can't go any lower. Remember, we talked about that. People say it can't go any lower. Until it hits zero, it can go lower. Once it hits zero, it can't go any lower. But when you sell short, there is literally, theoretically, no limit to the amount of money you can lose. Why? Because there's no limit to the price of a stock. The price can always go higher. And this can give you nightmares. It can put you in a situation where you lose unbelievable amounts of money, as we're going to see. There's a saying, he who sells what isn't his'n must buy it back or go to prison. Now, we don't. It's an old saying, and we don't have debtors' prisons anymore. But we're going to see a gentleman who lost over $100,000 overnight. Yeah. Yeah, right. And the brokerage firm, as I said, they're going to watch you like a hawk, because if this guy just disappears, they've got to come up with the money. The brokerage firm is basically saying, okay, this guy ran away. We'll have to come up with the money. And here are the calculations. Again, we're not going to do any of these calculations on the final exam. They're on the worksheet. I'll show you the worksheet. I'll show you the answer key. And when you take the Series 7, you got to learn how to do them, but don't worry about it now. All right, and here's the more examples. Okay. Now, so we'll go back to the worksheet. I'll show you the problems in just a minute. Remember, we talked about volatility, and we said when people start freaking out, I tell them relax. You know, it dropped 10%. Just wait a couple of days, and bingo, it skyrockets back up. And people go, "How? Why is it doing this?" Well, it's called a short squeeze. When the market is going down, those momentum investors that we talked about, buy high, sell higher, sell low, sell lower, who are following the trend of the market, the trend is your friend, they will often short stocks to try to take advantage of the down momentum, whether it's the market as a whole or an individual stock. This pushes the market down or pushes the market down or the individual stock down even further. But eventually, the shares must be all repurchased. Those shares must be repurchased. So think of it like a spring. The selling of shares short is like a spring where you push down upon the spring. And eventually, exactly, there's a subsequent up movement, and then those short sellers have to cover their positions. And that's what you're going to hear when you listen to the pundits on the news or on the internet. They'll talk about the short sellers covering their position, and that's why the stock zoomed up. And we looked at this quickly. We'll take a look at it again. The short interest. That's the amount of stock shares that have been sold short. So you can actually look at a stock, and when you go to that key statistics section, it will tell you how many shares are shorted. And the more shares are shorted, the more investors or traders, speculators, believe that the stock is going to go down. Now, what happens if it doesn't go down? What happens if it starts going up? Right, those short sellers have got to buy it back, and that will create that short squeeze, making the stock jump higher. In August of 2002, after almost 3 years of down markets, the short interest was the highest it had ever been in the history of the United States stock markets. And I just breathed a sigh of relief. I thought, okay, we're coming close to the end, because it was like water torture, right? 2008 and 2020, they've more like bolts of lightning out of the sky. But this 2000, 2001, 2002 were like little water tortures, you know, one drop. And so it was. The bottom was October 2002. So to me, that was, you know, that's the contrarian in me. All right, so let us now quickly take a look at a couple things before we we're almost finished now. So let's go to the the browser. Okay, and again, some of you weren't here, but here are the questions on the exams from chapters 15, options, 14, futures, buying and selling securities, which we're doing today, and then next week, account types, real estate, gold, cryptocurrency, starting a business, miscellaneous topics. Those questions are on the final exam. They're going to be right here. So now let's go down to, come on, sweetheart, go down to the end. All right. So go to, this is the chapter we're dealing on. And so here is a, the worksheet we'll take a look at in just a bit. This is actually a pretty good description from Investopedia, which is actually, we've made reference to Investopedia before. They explain shorting stock, selling short. But here's the one I want to show you here. Now, I already have it up here, right here. Is this it? No. Where did it go? Help. This guy had an account with, hello, what happened? It's gone. Here it is. Help! My short position got crushed, and now I owe E-Trade $106,000. What happened? Overnight, the shares of the company that he had shorted skyrocketed from about a dollar something, $2, to over $13. So here, his name is Joe Campbell. Now, when was this? Was 2016 or so? 2015. He claims he went to bed Wednesday evening with some $37,000 in his trading account. And the next day, he wound up with $106,000 in debt. And so he goes online and creates a GoFundMe plea to please help me. Yeah, okay. Well, people were not impressed. The stock exploded over 800%. And so remember, the stock goes down, he makes money, the stock goes up, he loses money. So here he is. The day before, he started with $33,000, and then the next day, he now owes $106,000 because he's got to buy these shares back at 800% more, eight times more. And so what happened? He took a beating in the comments. You fool, you lost a lot of money. Did you really care about the people you were? Because remember, shorting, you're hoping that the people who are long are going to lose. And he actually he had 45 people give him $1,500, and he actually had $5,300 people donated to him. So do you see? Oh, by the way, 8.1% annuity return. Ooh, love those annuities. We'll talk about annuities next week. Don't believe them. So do you see, folks? Do you see, dear students, how dangerous this is? A stock has no limit on how high it can go. If you had bought it long at $2 and it had gone down to $2, well, you lost $2. But he bought it short at $2. He sold it short at $2 and went up to $13, $14. Actually, it was less than $2 because he said it went up eight times. It's like $1.50. And so it went up to about $14, and now he's in trouble. Now he's got to buy it back at that price, and he doesn't have the cash. And he's going to have to liquidate his 401k, his wife's 401k, or he could declare bankruptcy, but that's a whole other, go to your business law professor and ask about why that's not a smart thing to do. Cool? Questions, thoughts, ideas? All right, comments, just scream and holler. All right, now let's take a look at a stock. Which stock do you think investors believe is going to go down? One of the stocks that has been shorted for years and people have lost unbelievable amounts of money is Tesla. People, there are very wise, making a whole lot of money, some of these people, who believe that Tesla is never going to succeed. Okay, come on. Why do I deal with this? Here it is. Come on, show all results. There's Tesla. And so, you know, back in September it was $200. And there were people saying, it's going to go to zero. Well, let's take a look at the statistics. And what you see is the short. Okay, the shares outstanding, 185 million. And there are 20 million shares that are short. Now, what does that mean? About 13.5% of the shares that are out there now are shorted. And so notice it's more. It more than it was a month ago. In March 13th, it was 16 million shares. So now there are more people out there who believe that Tesla is going to fall. So they've shorted the stock. As the price continues to rise, They are getting clobbered. They are losing tons of money. And there's some very famous investors, you know, speculators, traders, hedge fund managers and the like, who are saying it's still going to go down. Now, what's a company we would think would not be shorted as much? Let's try Apple. And let's see what they say about Apple on their statistics. There are, how many shares outstanding? 4.33 billion. And only 34 million are short, or 0.8%, not even 1%. So investors, traders, speculators are really betting that Apple is not going to go down. They're not betting that it's going to go down. They're staying away from a company like Apple. They're betting a company like Tesla is going to go down. So you see, if you do this, dear students, realize that you can lose a lot of money. And just like there was a margin call for the margin, buying on margin, if the stock price goes up and you start losing money, eventually your brokerage firm is going to call you, and they might not even call you. They might just sell the shares or buy the shares back on your behalf, because you said they could do that when you filled out the brokerage client agreement. Okay, let's go back to the website. And now here is the video. We don't have time for that. Forget that. But here's the video that you'll, and I have it queued up here. It's called The Very First Short Sale. And it's from a group called Planet Money. Very good group. Check out their videos and their audio blogs and the like. What are they called? Podcasts. Check out their stuff, because they're a very good group. And they have a dramatization of the very first short sale back in the 1600s, when stocks were just starting out, corporations, shareholders in common in the Netherlands. Very cool. So check that out. Okay, and then what's this guy? And that's the guy. Oh, there's betting on the market. We'll come back to him later on. All right, so let's go back now to the presentation and finish up the presentation. Okay, share. Okay, now, there used to be a valid reason for shorting a stock. It was called shorting against the box. I don't know why it was called that, but it's a stupid name. But you short stock that you already own. Huh? Why would you do that? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, why wouldn't you just sell the shares? Well, here's why. It allowed you to essentially sell the stock without creating the taxable transaction until you closed out the transaction with your own stock. So, for example, you're ready to sell this stock, but if you sell it, it's December, you're going to have to pay the capital gains in April, by April, when you do your taxes. So you could sell it short in December, get the money, and then deliver the shares in January, effectively postponing the taxes for another year. Well, guess what? The IRS removed this loophole back in 1997. that reason's gone. There's no reason, in my humble opinion, for you to short a stock. It's your money, dear students. But with options, futures, buying on margin, short selling, these are very exotic, dangerous things for you to do. And you know, you can lose a lot of money. Go right ahead. It's up to you. And you can make a lot of money. So who am I to say what you should do? Our last plea, careers and stocks. This is a review. Remember that the industry needs you. The typical way for people to get in the industry, and there are many different ways. Get in through the insurance industry, get in through the mortgage broker, banking industry, real estate, finance stuff. There's lots of loan and law officers. There's lots of places for you. But if you want to become a stockbroker, or registered representative is the legal term, account executive, financial planner, even though we're not really financial planners, that's a whole different designation. But we can call ourselves financial planners, is the Series 7. Now, the Series 7 is difficult. I was just talking with somebody yesterday, one of the students in the online class. It takes about 2 months of studying, 1 to 2 hours a day. You need to go over the material over and over again. It's 3 hours in the morning. You get an hour for lunch, and then 3 hours in the afternoon. 120 questions in the morning, 120 questions in the afternoon. It's a rough test, but it's not impossible. It's... It just you just have to treat it with the respect it deserves. You have to go through all the different sections and get 70% on all the different sections. And you don't see the difference. You just see the 120 questions come at you. But part of the sections are options, buying on margin, selling short. And if you don't, you know, treat them with the respect they deserve, you can get burnt pretty badly, and then you have to take it over again. You have to be sponsored by a brokerage firm to take the Series 7, but many brokerage firms are now sponsoring new recruits, especially if you take our Business 290 class, which is in this summer, where you get an internship. You get an internship out there in the industry. Typically, they don't pay, but you get college credit, and the professor... she's a doll peinado. She's really adorable. You can tell her I said that. She's a wonderful professor over this summer. She has tons of contacts. Our student employment services have tons of contacts for you, and the industry needs you, especially bilingual, people of color, minorities, ex-military, more women. We need more women, So do it. Think about it. Dream. Do it. And by the way, we talked about SIE, the Securities Industry Essentials. You can take that exam, which is it's a tiny Series 7, without being sponsored. And I forget where the slide that's on, but I should put something on here. Contact me again for how to do that. Because we had students who've done it, and they passed it, and the industry wants to talk to you. And that, dear students, is our discussion of buying and selling securities with brokerage firms, buying on margin, and short sales. And now next week, how are we doing for time? Not bad. Actually, pretty good. Next week, we'll have some miscellaneous topics in investing, accounts types, real estate, investing, precious metals, hard assets, cryptocurrency, and the ultimate investing, starting a business. Okay, so now... okay, so let's go now to back to the website. Okay, so I have it queued up somewhere. So here's the margin and shorting worksheet. There's the commentary, but let's just take a look at the answer key, because the answer key has the answers. Come on, sweetheart. Come on, honey. Oh no, the recommended exercise where you talk to, you know, get some referrals, check out who would you like to. There's no assignment required, but this is if you're going to choose a brokerage firm. So let's get rid of that guy. But this is what we want. Here is what we want. Okay, here are the questions that very typical that you will see on this Series 7. You have $5,000 to invest in Dewey Cheatham and Howell, but you want to maximize your return, and the stock price is currently $25, what is the maximum number of shares you could purchase buying on margin if the margin requirement is 50%? So you come up with $5,000. You can borrow $5,000, which means you have $10,000 in purchasing power. If each price stock is worth $25, that allows you to buy 400 shares. So you have $10,000 in shares, and you have $5,000 loan and $5,000 of equity. And then it asks you what happens if the price falls to 17. And then, so those are the kind of questions you're going to get. What if the price goes up? What if the price goes down? What happens? And then another one is the second page is when we short a stock. You decide to short the stock. It's currently selling for $10. You short $400, the initial margin requirement is 50%. How much do you have to come up with? You're going to get $4,000 from the proceeds. You have to come up with $2,000, 50% of what you borrowed. Remember, you can't make, you know, $10 on a $0 investment. And so what happens if the price rises? What happens if the price falls? These are the kind of questions you're going to get on the Series 7. And you're not going to be on the final exam. Did I say that enough times? You're not going to be on the final exam. So why don't we just close that right away before I scare you anymore. Okay. And lastly, I think I showed you this. I'm going to show it to you again to say that, you know, you I know, dear students, it is very typical that you, it's me, I still feel it. You will never feel 100% confident about your investments that you've made. You're dealing with uncertainty. There's no 100% way, unless you're the Federal Reserve chairperson and you know tomorrow you can drop interest rates and you can buy a bunch of options to call options. That's certainty, but then you can go to jail, right? That's insider trading. So in this scenario, these people made decisions not based on the kind of stuff that we've learned here, not based on any fundamental analysis, not based on the company earnings, not based on their what's going on with their competitors, doing no kinds of prediction of what's going to happen in the future. What's going on with their competitors, with the market as a whole, their customers. They didn't. This is what she did. She just heard that this stock, and I think I showed it to you, but I'll show it to you again because I think it just bears repeating. Come on, sweetheart. Come on, page 926, page 27, 20. Here we go. Okay.
Well, just because you needed to come in doesn't mean that it will.
It's funny that people are motivated by anxiety to take a risk. You think that anxiety would make them risk averse.
Let's go! Time to go home! Come on!
Sharon eventually sold Microsoft. The next time we caught up with her, she and Russ had put their life savings into two tiny, volatile technology stocks. Why?
Because we're working very hard and not furthering ourselves. It's too slow. We have got to do something aggressive.
It is scary, but at this point, she just wants to, Sharon? Well, actually, she took a little more and just invested recently and was very conservative, and she kind of went and did something that I think we'll make out on. As long as the market doesn't crash. But yeah. Right now, just about everything's in there.
What'd she do?
She went and invested in a stock that she was told was going to do very well.
To say the truth, I don't even know the name of it. I know the call letters are AMLN. It's supposed to double by August. Do you worry about your future financially?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Okay, dear students, let's let's go back here. Let's go back and analyze. What he's saying. He took it from something very conservative. Well, she sold Microsoft, which at the time was going gangbusters since 1997. But Microsoft peaked in 2000 and didn't come back to its original price until 2012 or something like that. And so Microsoft was not very conservative. But then she put it all into a company. She didn't even know the name of the company. Dear students, AMLN was Amylin Pharmaceuticals, based here in San Diego. And the stock price literally plummeted 95% over the next year and a half. Now, eventually, if she had held on until 2012, it came back and she would have made her money. But did she hold on until 2012? No, of course not. She probably sold at the bottom, which is why, even though you still feel uncomfortable about making decisions, you're not alone. You're going to do a whole lot better than a whole lot of people because you're going to have your eyes open. And I'm not trying to say you should never invest in an Amylin Pharmaceuticals, but you're going to understand that, okay, put a tiny little bit of money into this company because it could go into the porcelain oasis very quickly. And put more money into the Coca-Colas of the world and the Home Depots of the world and the Exxon Mobils of the world. The Procter & Gamble. The companies have their roots deep in the economy. We've shown you several different types of stocks and companies all semester long. And hopefully you have been drawn to the ones that make you feel more comfortable, are more attractive to you, makes more sense to you, that you understand. Cool? Okay, great. So now, what's going next? The next, what we'll do, when we come back on, remember, tonight we have our online office hour for mostly the online students, but many of them don't show up, 7:30 tonight. We'll do whatever you want to do. go through some of the worksheets. We'll go through the pre-final work. We're going to go through the pre-final worksheet next week, so don't worry. Janet wanted to go. Oh, we got to talk about the Chapter 6 bonus assignment. Okay, but then next week we're going to do miscellaneous topics in investment. And so we'll discuss retirement accounts, annuities real fast, real estate. Real estate's a whole semester unto itself, I'll give you my take on real estate. Precious metal, art, collectibles, stay away unless it brings you joy. Cryptocurrencies, you know, that's no longer in the news now. It's all about COVID. And then the ultimate investment, starting a business. And then we'll be done. That'll be next week. And we'll review for the final. And so I'm so proud of you. Now, real quick, we want to make mention of what back in Chapter 6, there was the bonus assignment. The bonus assignment is exactly like the Chapter 6 assignment. You're going to do the price models, the constant perpetual growth model, discounted cash flow model. You know, once you've done them a few times, they're very simple. And again, you can use the spreadsheet. You can use the spreadsheet that we discussed in Chapter 6. Or just use the present value tables. But what's the difference? The difference is that you are going to look at a company using Value Line, or, you know, if you want to use Standard & Poor's, but you can't get them. The libraries are all closed. And what I did is I sent you out. If you need another one, contact me. I sent out some of the copies of this of that Value Line allowed us to do, and you're going to say, okay, I think the dividends. Well, Value Line tells me the dividends are going to be this much, or Yahoo, or MarketWatch told me that they're going to be this much in 2020, and they've been growing at 4%, 5%, 6%. So next year, you know, they were $2 this year. They're probably going to be $2.08 next year, $2.10, and then the year after they're going to be $2.20. And then the stock price is $75 now. We think probably $95 or maybe $100 at the end of 2022. Are you with me? You're going to come up with those numbers, and remembering that, as we said, you know that that's not what's going to happen. If you do hit it right on the money, congratulations. But 99% of the time, it's not going to be exactly, because it's the future. We don't know what's going to happen. But that, as we said over and over, will tilt the odds in our favor such that we'll be investing the bulk of our investments in companies that have their roots deep in the economy, that have been around for decades. Clorox, right? Real boring companies, and we're not going to become rich overnight. I mean, I can guarantee that. But at the same time, unless the world ends, we're not going to become poor overnight. Cool. All right. So we're at 10:00. Any questions? Any thought? Let's go back to the stopping the share and see who's still around. Anybody got questions? Okay. Here it is. Andres, what's going on?
I don't know. I actually want to talk to you in private, but I got...
Okay, wait. Stop. You want to talk to me in private? Just hang on a minute, and I will stick around. I got another office hour here. I usually stick around between 10 and 11 o'clock if anybody's around. So stick around, and we'll talk in private, because awesome. We're not in private now. Anybody got any good jokes? Did you hear about the guy? This is very tragic. He was his whole left side was cut off. They rushed him to the hospital. He's all right now. You see, his left side was cut off, and they rushed him to the hospital. He's all right now. Yeah, I know. I love bad jokes. I love bad jokes. Okay, so Tiffany, welcome. What did you think? Is she still there? Oh, yeah, Tiffany's there. Okay, she might be. I know some people just, you know, they put their phone on or a computer on, they disappear, because I wait around, I try to call them, hello, are you still there? I think, no, not there. Okay, well, all right, so I'm going to stop recording now. How do I stop? Okay, come on, so where's the recording? Stop recording. Yes.
The recording has stopped.